Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, or whenever you happen to be listening to this. Welcome to the Film Realist Podcast, the film and TV podcast from a complete nobody. That is hopefully for somebody. My name is Kyle Naranya, and welcome to episode 184, the first feature film review of 2026. This week's review is, of course, of 28 Years Later, The Bone Temple, the sequel to 28 Years Later, and the midquel, I guess, because we do know we will be getting a third film with a subtitle unknown yet, but it's currently in production, and we'll get it who knows when, but I'm very curious to seeing what this third film in this five-film franchise is going to look like. As this is a feature film review, there will be a non-spoiler section as well as a spoiler section. Time codes will be listed in the description, so if you haven't had a chance to see the movie yet, you will have the opportunity to hop around. Let's get back to the most depressing England of all time with 28 Years Later, The Bone Temple.
What's your name?
Spike.
No. I think your name is Jimmy.
The first place that I want to start off with is actually the really odd release date of this film. Now, if you're not a diehard film goer or a longtime observer of this medium, you might not know that January and February, for a really long time, are where movies go to die. If a studio has a movie that they're not necessarily have a lot of faith in, they typically come out in January, which is odd because 28 years later was June. It's only been just 7 months since the first installment in this planned 28 years trilogy. So I do find that really interesting. But regardless of that, there was planning around this new version of this franchise because this movie was shot back to back with 28 years later. So we are here in the shortest window ever in returning to this franchise. We, of course, had 28 days later, 28 weeks later, and then 28 years later, which I really did like. All of the films in this franchise are going to be written, not franchise, in this new trilogy, are going to be written by Alex Garland. So it is so funny to me, as a diehard Star Wars fan, something that Danny Boyle, Alex Garland, and Nia DaCosta were able to figure out. Now, of course, this is after this, but hey, we're writing a trilogy. I think it would be really wise to have the same screenwriter work on all three films. If only other legacy franchises, say returning in 2015, 2017, and 2019 could have figured that out. I think just from a creative standpoint, to have the same voice behind the writing would have, I think that would have been really important to have that. You have some continuity, at least from one of the creative voices, and then you allow the flair of the different directors to kind of help individualize each installment in a trilogy. That's planning, man. That's crazy. I don't know any other franchise that could have used that effectively. Now, let's move on to not talking about The Last Jedi, or Star Wars, or The Rise of Skywalker, or The Force Awakens. Let's go into non-spoilers for 28 Years Later, The Bone Temple. I like Nia DaCosta a lot. Coming into this, I'm not thinking about the Marvels at all. I'm thinking about Candyman. Now, a little story time before we get into that review. If this is your first time listening to the Film Realist podcast, I am not somebody who enjoys horror movies, slasher films, or the gore porn, torture porn movies. They make me really unsettled. I can understand a horror movie or enjoy something that is cerebral and really has compelling ideas that drive the narrative while also being scary. I typically enjoy more thrillers, but the 28 franchise is something I really appreciate because there's a mix of those things. If you didn't listen to my review for 28 Years Later, what I loved so much about Alex Garland and Danny Boyle's iteration of that version of the film was there was a balance tonally. It's really important to allow an audience to decompress with humor or just comedic moments because you can't just be tense the entire time. While that is an experience in this genre, it doesn't necessarily play effectively, at least for me as a viewer. And what's so great about Nia DaCosta coming in is her mentality when approaching this is so succinctly on par with something that Danny Boyle wants to do, which is this movie continues to push the envelope of the first 28 years film. This is a sequel that jumps immediately in the aftermath of the previous installment, and we really get to see more of this world where the first film in this new trilogy did such a fantastic job of establishing the time jump. What is this world? What is going on in the aftermath of this outbreak? What has happened to the UK? We had an opportunity to see, I believe they were Swedish military forces in the first film, but this movie really dives into the societal specifics of one particular clan. And Jack O'Connell, without getting into spoilers, he just keeps popping up in these incredible performances in these horror films. From Sinners, he has a brief cameo in 28 years later, but in The Bone Temple and Sinners, he's absolutely incredible, and it would be a shame if one of the big franchises did not use him, because purely maniacally as a villain, this cult nature to which he has in the movie, you can hear it in the clip leading into this, the idea of the Jimmies and what that means, what is their religious following, and how does this work? Because in the ravaged world that is the United Kingdom after this outbreak, you have people sort of going back to basics, and we saw a lot of that in the way that the community was sort of held together in the first film in the new trilogy. And then this movie's opportunity to really explore who is a supporting character in 28 years later with Ralph Fiennes as Kelson. And I am so impressed by having movies like this in this franchise, because you can have things that are just unwieldingly terrifying and everything is scary, but to really focus on character, it makes the meaningful journey that the characters go on, despite all of the insanity around them, much more impactful. And Ralph Fiennes, this is not shocking. This guy is an incredible actor who's been in so many projects, but at the age of 63, giving an opportunity to show a really subdued, compassionate performance in the midst of an apocalypse. This is somebody who took the Hippocratic Oath, his character Kelson, who is a doctor, and just seeing his whole point of view on the world and his relationship with Samson that we saw only briefly in the previous movie, all of the foundation of the outside world that we got in the first one, Alex Garland and Nia DaCosta really explore it more in-depthly, because we get to focus on things that were just additions to the world of Spike and everyone else from the island. And this movie's terrifying. It's disgusting. There were moments in this movie that I'm not afraid to say I closed my eyes, because it was absolutely gross. Nia DaCosta really pushes the envelope in the brutality of this world. And having two distinct people in this apocalypse dealing with the trauma that obviously everybody would be feeling in such different ways, you quite literally get the complete opposite of each other, to emphasize what someone's reaction to this brutality could be. Could it be one of peace and looking for answers? Or could it be one of taking control and being a religious zealot? And obviously you see that in the trailers for this. You see the blonde wigs worn by all the Jimmies, as well as the conversations had between Jack O'Connell and Ralph Fiennes about the iconography of the Bone Temple itself, which again was such an interesting introduction, but to have this be one of the main set pieces and what the ideology behind what this is as a memorial to the people who have lost their lives because of this infestation, this pandemic that did hit the island of the United Kingdom, and what it's done, and the way that Ralph Fiennes is able to subtly show those elements of his humanity, even in insane situations where he has this behemoth of an infected person constantly visiting him with Samson, and using all of the deaths that have happened either by his hand or by the other infected to be a symbol of rebirth in where they are all skinned and boiled, and the skulls are there so that there is a symbol of the lives that have been lost, as opposed to burials in the ground where nobody would be seen, unmarked graves, or even hordes of bodies everywhere as food for the infected, that this is the simplest and most realistic way to deal with the aftermath of these people and not having it just be meaningless. And to find the beauty in life within this movie, which is, again, a supernatural, to some degree, horror film, post-apocalyptic. And it really does push the envelope in terms of balancing that tonal shift, where everything with the Jimmys and Spike's journey from the previous movie into this movie, Alfie Williams, of course, being him again, really seeing the horrible capabilities of humanity, and specifically having to be challenged by his own morality and survival, and seeing the individuality within each of the Jimmys and the unbridled veracity to which people are able to do things because of what they believe is the right thing to do in this post-apocalyptic world is truly terrifying. Because it's not something that necessarily is shocking. You are able to see what humans are capable of in a film like this because of the otherworldly nature of a situation like this. But it is also similar to the way that science fiction tells its stories. It's a mirror for the real world, where getting swept up in religious insanity, quite frankly, in the way it's produced in this or portrayed in this movie, really is terrifying. And everyone involved with the movie who carries forward from the previous one and into this one, it's awesome to see how Nia DaCosta's abilities perfectly matched up with the style of this new trilogy. And I couldn't be more excited to seeing where we go with the sort of conclusion, because there's a substantial amount of plot elements in this that are going to carry forward. But the way that they're naturally feel like an evolution off of the first 28 years later was so cohesive. And that creativity and the consistency from the creative voices does really matter. You don't just have people popping in for what feels like anthology stories within this wider world. You have a trilogy of stories that are continuing, specifically with Spike, because he is our main character from the first film and sort of transitioned into this one with Kelson, and what is going to be the consequences of the choices they make in this movie, because that's how Bone Temple reacted to the previous one. But man, for a January horror movie to be something that I'm just not going to be able to shake for multiple reasons, because it was absolutely disgusting, but its evaluation of humanity in this environment, it's absolutely incredible. And if you're judging Nia DaCosta on just having seen The Marvels, you clearly just don't watch enough movies, because Candyman was amazing and this is incredible. And I'm really hoping she gets to make more movies like this, or the opportunity to really dive into something that shows off her strengths as opposed to whatever the pitch was to get her on The Marvels. So I really enjoyed 28 years later, The Bone Temple. And I'm hoping it's not going to be 6 months, but a year from now, I'm really, really looking forward to seeing the conclusion to the 28 years later trilogy. Let's get into spoilers and really dive into the meat and potatoes of this movie.
This is a memorial to the dead.
So, is this all you're doing?
It is.
Are you Old Nick?
Old Nick? You mean Satan?
Yes. Old Nick released his demons unto the world of man.
So the movie pretty much starts very closely after the previous one, where we see that Spike was rescued by Jimmy and the Fingers, and we get to see essentially a ritualistic, inauguration, where he has to kill one of the Jimmys to become a Jimmy, and Spike just barely survives this, stabbing somebody in the thigh, hitting one of their arteries, and they bleed to death. And this is the first instance where we really get to see the brutality behind Sir Lord Jimmy, played by Jack O'Connell, and it's truly terrifying to see somebody who clearly is so broken from his experience, which we saw in the very beginning of 28 years later, and he is wearing the cross upside down, believes that he has this connection with Satan, who talks in his head. Clearly there's some sort of mental health in this instance, and his followers who are willing to do whatever Jimmy says. And while the metaphor may not necessarily be overly complicated, the simplistic nature makes the message much more meaningful in its delivery, where we see through Jimmy, Sir Jimmy, and specifically his group, the Fingers, that the brutality of this world, while we obviously have the infected, is much more the humans that are still inhabiting it. Well, I don't know why I struggle with that. And that is the most terrifying part of this movie. It's so gross to see what these people do because of Sir Jimmy and his followers who are willing to do absolutely heinous things. There is a scene in this movie where they fall upon some farmers, some survivors, and they skin people alive. I covered my eyes, even though I'm not necessarily sure how much of this we saw in the movie. It's absolutely disgusting that this ritualistic torture has just become every day for the Fingers under Sir Jimmy, and Spike reasonably reacts to this by throwing up. On the other side of the story, we get to see Kelson's relationship with Samson evolve. We know that he was giving him some drug to help calm him down, but it's fascinating that unlike other stories with a similar setup, a zombie apocalypse or infected people, zombies, creatures, critters, whatever they happen to be, that the exploration of the possibility of a cure is not done through a means of we have to solve this so that we can save humanity. It's one guy's relationship, a doctor who is still trying his best to be that doctor that he was prior to his world ending. And the evaluation of what it means to be human with Samson and his constant visits to Kelson, Dr. Kelson, Ray Fiennes' character, and slowly becoming himself. There's a beautiful moment where the both of them are kind of high on morphine, and Samson, for what is probably nearly 30 years, says moon. Just looking up at something that the universe has created, the moon, which we've all seen as human beings, and it brings some of the humanity back, some conscious memory of what that word is for that thing glowing in the sky, and Kelson's absolute joy in seeing you're not truly gone. That human being that you once were is still there. And I so appreciate, I mean, we've seen Ray Fiennes be somebody who's caring and compassionate. He's probably most famous now for being Voldemort. I mean, he was also a King's Man, and he was also the voice of Alfred in the Lego Batman movie. But this nurturing portrayal of this doctor in the midst of this crazy, crazy world, still looking altruistically for the best in people. And that's why his confrontations and his conversations with Sir Jimmy, which I included in the spoiler lead up to this, are so fascinating, because he's still trying to do the right thing, even in the midst of the insanity of what's going on in this movie. And you see some of it in the trailers and the posters for this belief that potentially he may be Satan, because just looking at the world he's created for himself, it could be absolutely horrifying. Human bones built into this kingdom around this one man who's always covered in blood and mud and other pheromones so that way he can survive. And it's fascinating to explore this cult within the Jimmys and the Fingers, and loss of power and a lack of belief, and sort of throwing a Hail Mary, pun intended, to the idea that Kelson, under pressure from Sir Jimmy, could save them. And getting to see somebody who is not in that mentality at all in this world, still trying to do something in order to save Spike, because of course they have a pre-established relationship from the previous movie. And getting to have someone like Spike, who is morally centered based on his experiences with his mom and his dad, and obviously the conversations he had with Kelson in the previous one, that it's his introduction into the world of the Jimmys and the Seven Fingers, as well as Jimmy Inc's exposure to who Kelson is, seeing his relationship with Samson, that this is not the world that Sir Jimmy has made them believe it is, that through the challenges of skinning the people, trying not to, or having another instance of somebody be inaugurated through ritualistic combat, and Spike's connection to the other people breaks down this whole mentality, and you start to see people act in their own personal interests. This community, allegedly, that was supposed to be formed falls apart at the real first sign of struggle, which is Spike being interjected into this group. And Alfie is so good. I don't know how old this young actor is. It says 15, but I believe these both shot in 2024. So he would have been 13 at the time. And to be the lead of this franchise, which was not something I suspected at all, blows me away, because the actors that he is able to go toe-to-toe with, and moving forward, what it's going to mean on the next actor he's going to have to go toe-to-toe with, it might be an Oscar winner, blows my mind. And to see Ralph Fiennes' Kelson try to portray Satan because of saving Spike and all the others around him, he is that doctor, and the insanity to which he does that, so that way Sir Jimmy might be able to hold on to his power. Just the dichotomy of that performance from Ralph Fiennes, when you have seen this calm and caring individual through 99% of the movie, and his untimely demise just being still to save someone that he is willing to put his life on the line, but sees the horror that is in front of him. He's seen more humanity out of Samson and trying to save him than he did with Sir Jimmy, ultimately leading to Sir Jimmy's demise. But on top of that, I mentioned the humanity that we explored with Samson, and just getting to add more to his backstory, where it would be so easy, it'd be so easy to have a character like this, an alpha, who is just there as a physical threat. We don't need to do anything with him, he's just there. But he is the ultimate epitome of what is possible when somebody believes in you, and getting to see his backstory, what his life was like 28 years prior to being infected, was not something I suspected at all. We got moments of being terrified from him in the first film, and we got moments of being terrified from him in the second film, but I'm blown away by, I can't remember the name of that actor, Chai Lewis Perry, the subtlety to his performance. And there are so many limits on what he is able to do because of who Samson is as a character. Just blew me away. And to get a movie that is so eloquently structured and clearly lays out its two worlds, and then the conclusion being the Venn diagram that connects them together, ultimately leading us to what the third film will likely have from a character standpoint, be focused on. But narratively, I'm not necessarily sure on where it's going. But we did know ultimately it was going to lead to this, which is Jim, played by Cillian Murphy, is back. And we now have the 28 days later world connected to the 28 years later world. And I just have to take my hat off to Alex Garland, Nia DaCosta, Danny Boyle, and everybody else involved, because successfully telling two legacy sequel stories that are also individually as interesting from each other, because clearly the focus has been on to paint different brushes of this world, and it'll be really cool. I'm very much looking forward to hopefully getting, with Spike being back with Jim, getting to maybe more populated areas. What is London like? What are some of the other cities? Manchester, and I'm sorry, I can't name any other ones off the Liverpool. Are we going to see dense populated areas in the aftermath of this 28 years later? Because I'm very curious to seeing what we do. Is that movie going to be stylistically more like 28 Days Later? Because having something that's been significantly more rural and I guess you could describe it as isolating, being in the wild, in nature, it's allowed them cinematography to be significantly different than what was the claustrophobic nature of 28 Days Later. So I'm very much looking forward to that. Did you see 28 Years Later, The Bone Temple this past weekend? Make sure to let me know what you thought about it in the comments. And now let's jump to listener mail and question of the week responses.
Can I ask you a question?
Just one?
There's something I really need to ask you.
I ask the questions, you answer the questions.
Why do you ask questions to which you already know the answers?
Did that count as a question?
Yes.
Damn it.
Last week's question of the week was significantly broad, and I knew that I did that, but we got a wide variety of answers, which is cool. It was, what franchise would you like to revisit 28 years later? The first is from Dylan Pollock, who said, a franchise I'd want to revisit 28 years later. Such a specific amount of time, lol. In horror, I'd say Drag Me to Hell. Let's see someone new dealing with the curse, going to the old Justin Long, who's seen that it's real. In comedy, I'd be curious about what old Billy Bob Thornton would be doing in Bad Santa. Maybe from a classic series, we could see Daniel Craig do his own older Bond similar to Connery did Never Say Never Again. Kyle, what series would you like to see? He also gave another answer, which is Knives Out, but it's Ransom getting out of jail and wanting to destroy Benoit Blanc. I would love that, but I feel like we actually probably have to wait 28 years later. Scotty Cameron says, I would like to see Hostel get revisited. There's some torture porn, Scotty. I know many people might say it's Saw at Home or Timu Saw, but there is a lot of interesting stuff to explore with this franchise, like how the elite hunting group is this cabal of rich guys who bid on tourists to kill them in whatever way they want. There's a part of me that would like Hostel akin to Halloween 2018 to retcon Paxton's death from the first 10 minutes of Hostel 2, give him his own hunter arc like Laurie in Halloween 18. Scotty, I would love to understand what any of that means. I get some of the Halloween references, but I have specifically avoided any of the Hostel movies. Thanks so much for writing in, but I'm curious to seeing if we ever get that, because isn't that the Eli Roth franchise? Let me look that up real quick, because I feel like it is. I might be wrong about that, though. No, I was right. Yeah, no thanks for me. And then lastly, we have Legacy Odinson. I'll limit myself to horror for the sake of helping me narrow stuff down. I believe a 28 years later Legacy sequel of Nightmare on Elm Street would be really good ground to cover. As a sequel to the originals or as a sequel to the remake, it would work either way. Making Krueger a generational threat, similar to Pennywise, but without the Derry amnesia, could make for some interesting dynamics for both protagonists and the antagonists. Legacy, I think you gave the best answer. That's really interesting, and I would like to see if it was similar to what Scotty said, how it would be handled like the Halloween new trilogy that we got. That would be really cool. Dylan, you wanted to know what I thought. This is something I wish, because I just don't feel like it's going to happen. As a longtime fan of the DC animated universe, I thought the best way to keep Ben Affleck as Bruce Wayne / Batman, it would be absolutely incredible to get Batman Beyond. 28 years later is a fair amount of time for Bruce to be retired, and then you could have Ben Affleck be the Bruce in the chair, because Batman Beyond is a franchise I just don't think we are going to be getting in live action anytime soon. We have Robert Pattinson as Batman, we likely have a DCU Batman, and given where they are in their careers, I just don't see it happening, which is really frustrating because I love Batman Beyond. I love it so much. Thank you to everybody who submitted their answers for Question of the Week. If you'd like to do that, you can always email the podcast, filmrealistpod@gmail.com. Now, I'm excited to say that there's going to be a bonus episode this week. You're going to get to hear my thoughts on Wonder Man. I have seen all 8 episodes, so that episode will be out later. So make sure you're subscribed on your favorite podcast platform. But because of next week's review, which is going to be of Mercy, the AI cop film with Chris Pratt and Rebecca Ferguson, my question is this. What is your favorite movie's interpretation of artificial intelligence? You can email the podcast, as I said, filmrealistpod@gmail.com. You can comment below directly on YouTube and Spotify, and I look forward to your answers, and I will react to them on next week's episode. If you haven't reviewed the podcast on your favorite podcast platform, please do so. It helps the podcast get into the other algorithms of other people and raise up the charts, as well as subscribing on YouTube. We are slowly crawling towards that 500 subscriber mark, which would be absolutely incredible to hit sometime soon. If you are listening to this on the Multiverse of Color, you can check out my other articles there. And if you've not listened to other episodes of the podcast and you dug this one, maybe check out 28 Years Later, the first in this new trilogy. Thank you so much for listening to the show. My name is Kyle Naranja, and I will see you next time.